I think death would be easier than a divorce. What's wrong with that? This is a business.
The more you charge, the more people are willing to pay.
They didn't give me a lawyer.
Pay this $11,000 or go to jail.
After 2 hours, we will have spent more than most people in this courthouse make in a year.
Your home, your valuables are all going to be sold to pay the lawyers and people like me.
He still made a decision to take my son away from me. His birthday was last week and I didn't get to see him.
And the lawyers are throwing gasoline on that fire.
The system is designed to create conflict.
Deaths, suicide, murder.
This is the Dean, the Dean.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
How you doing, Mustafa?
Alhamdulillah.
Sheikh Mustafa, Imam Mustafa.
Alhamdulillah, doing excellent.
How you been? How's everything over there in Cali?
Things are good. Alhamdulillah. Things are going actually really well.
I heard you guys went in reverse now with the phases that they have in different cities. Is it reopening or what's going on with the whole COVID thing down there?
We were reopening until recently, but last week the governor issued turnaround on that. So all restaurants indoors have to be closed. In fact, he actually issued that all masjids inside, all churches, all religious organizations cannot hold in-person services indoors. So everyone's doing it outdoors now.
Everyone. So the masjids are back. They were open. Now they're back to being shut down?
They're back to being shut down officially. I cannot even go into my masjid legally because we're not allowed to. So we just do it outside in the parking lot. So we had Eid last week, and I did like 4 khutbas outside in our parking lot. Which is totally legal. So basically, like restaurants, Denny's and all those restaurants, they're actually having tents in their parking lot. And people are going and eating in the tent because they can't go inside the restaurant to eat.
I'm just curious, before we get into what we intended to talk about, I'm just curious, like I've heard many Christians, they've actually fought this. They said it's unconstitutional and they actually fought this for their religious freedoms and whatnot. Have you heard anything about this?
Yeah, I've been following that. A lot of Christian groups actually reached out to us as well and said, hey, you know, do you want to join us in the fight against this? This was quite a while back, about a month ago. So we looked into it. And the way that it works in America is that there's states and then there's the federal government. So when there's a conflict between the two, the state gets immediate precedence. And then there's going to be a lawsuit between the two. And then the federal government can, override after going through court. But the local state will always take precedence by default. So what happened was, even if we did that and we tried to like fight it in any way, it would just be a long process. We wouldn't be able to override the state's authority until the lawsuit completes. And that's going to take a very long time. So the churches wouldn't open anyways, and the masjids wouldn't open anyways.
Yeah. You know, the Islamophobes are always looking for something to nitpick about. You know, they can't attack the theology of Islam, the pure monotheism. It's really something that brings a lot of people to Islam. It's straightforward. Worship the one and only creator of the heavens and earth, not his creation. Simple. But there's some things that need a little bit more explanation. And now where there's ambiguity somewhere, they try to capitalize on that. One of the things out of the many, and usually if someone's not being disingenuous, they're really sincere, looking for the truth. I'm sure you've experienced so many times when you sit with an individual and you explain things in context. Maybe you can give some examples on one of those true stories. People are like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Here is one example is where, have you ever heard where people criticize also the divorce system in Islam? So this is what I wanted to get into. I want to share this clip with you. And then we can kind of compare it, contrast it with the Islamic solution, and then we can go from there. How's that?
Let's do it.
I think death would be easier than a divorce.
It's very frustrating to have gone for help and then come out with your family destroyed.
We have serious problems in our family law court system.
Getting divorced is far from easy.
Litigation lasted for over a year.
I was married only 4 months, and my divorce has lasted over 6.5 years.
Close to 8 years.
8 years.
Why is divorce so difficult?
People can get as much justice as they can afford. Most people cannot afford any justice at all.
What's wrong with that? This is a business.
The more you charge, the more people are willing to pay.
They didn't give me a lawyer.
Pay this $11,000 or go to jail. it really got to the end of the line for me.
I said to the litigants, I want you to know, after 2 hours, we will have spent more than most people in this courthouse make in a year.
Your home, your valuables are all going to be sold to pay the lawyers and people like me.
Even though I was acquitted, he still made a decision to take my son away from me. His birthday was last week, and I didn't get to see him.
What you have is a tinderbox, and the lawyers are throwing gasoline on that fire.
The system is designed to create conflict.
I received a phone call for another $25,000. He'd be able to give us what we wanted. Extortion?
Family court results in more violence than any other area of law.
Deaths, suicide, murder.
No jury, just the one biased judge.
The judge says, even if you win, you have to pay.
The whole thing is just insane. Follow the money.
Okay, so that's actually the trailer from a documentary called Divorce Court. It's interesting that you had, I think, in today's day and age, when we try to promote morality and you bring up marriage to someone besides the people who try to attack Islam on the different variant things, but you've probably been in that position where you talk about marriage and a person who's maybe gone through it or heard the horror stories. At the end of the trailer, he talks about you got more death, suicide, and all these other things that are happening just because someone's divorced with all the trauma that goes with it. And someone's like, why would I want to do that again? Why would I want to go through that nightmare again? So this can actually be a form of dawah when you're talking to people, giving the Islamic solution. What do you think about that when you hear this? Have you seen this documentary?
Yeah, I've seen the documentary. I watched it more than once. Very eye-opening. I just watched it in the last year. I wish I had watched it earlier. It came out in 2014. But yeah, I mean, this highlights a major problem in our society. And Islam is, alhamdulillah, such a beautiful religion. If only people would understand what the reality is that they're living in, and they realize what Islam really taught about marriage, about divorce, about all these things, they would begin to appreciate the teachings of Islam. And I've had this conversation with many people, Muslims and non-Muslims, and the moment they realize what Islam actually teaches about both marriage and divorce, the value of marriage, and also the possibility of divorce, as well as the simplicity of divorce and marriage, they're amazed, they're shocked, and they're like, well, why don't we practice this in our society? You know, this would be better for families in general. Hundred percent, and I'll tell you why. I've been telling a lot of my friends, a lot of my imam friends, that they need to watch this, because what happens, and I've been guilty of this myself, right? You have a couple come in, they're married, by the state, and they're considering divorce, and they don't seem to be working out how they want to go about getting divorced. So the imam is like, look, I don't have time to deal with these things in detail. I can't, be your arbitrator or, your negotiator. Usually end up telling the guy or the girl, you should hire a lawyer. That is like the worst thing. That's the worst advice that any imam can give, except in like the most extreme circumstances, right? Because what you're doing is you're basically putting people into the divorce corp, not divorce court, right? Divorce, it's a corporation. That's what the documentary is about. So you basically you've ruined the person's life by giving that one statement of advice saying, you know what, you should go to a lawyer or you should go through the court rather than trying to settle it the Islamic way out of court by going through mediation or something like that. So I've done that. And I know many imams who do that because they're like, well, that's outside of our jurisdiction. Like we just offer advice. But that one piece of advice can destroy somebody's life for a year, 5 years, 10 years, destroy families down the line. So we need to be very careful of what we're saying. And one imam actually told me about the documentary, and then he's like, you need to watch this. So when I finally watched it, I'm like, man, we need to tell everyone, every imam to watch it in particular.
Inshallah, we can get this out to every imam, every scholar out there, because I think it's very important. Some highlights of it, I remember them talking about how the couple, they'll come in and they'll try to have an amicable divorce. They'll try to go in and just peacefully resolve things. But then what happens, the lawyers have them fill out the paperwork. They see how much they're worth. Pretty much they see how much they can milk them for. And then they start pumping them up. They start, it's already a tinderbox, as they say. It's already fragile. And now they start, you know, was. They start to go ahead. The shaitan starts working through these lawyers. They pump them up, and it's a full-out war.
Yep, that's what happened. They put a lien on the house. They put a lien on your car. And they know they're going to get paid at the end of the day because that's the way the system works.
And then you also, another highlight is there. And then what they have is they have the lawyers who are, again, putting fire, gas on the fire. And then they end up, there's one part I remember, they had someone to come in, a psychologist, to go ahead and see, like, what's the status of the children. Do you remember that part?
Remember that part. Very sad. Mention what that guy did.
Yeah, that guy, that person was someone who was the most morally degenerate person. And he had all these like scandalous photos of himself doing some crazy like what's that like? I think it's where they do like that the person that leather strap and beating himself.
Yeah, leather and strap.
What's that? Also, there's a name for it. It's like I forgot. Huh?
You mean BDSM?
Is that what does that stand for again?
It's like bondage.
Dominance. Yes, something like that. So now that person is evaluating you're standing with your family. He's going to give you advice. Can you imagine? The courts bring that type of person in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that was horrible. And another thing I loved about the documentary, it was designed, it's designed for skeptical people. And I like that sometimes in documentaries. Sometimes people are always skeptical and they're like, I don't know about this. Maybe there's no alternative. The thing that I really loved about them is that it's coming from a Western perspective, right? It's coming from an American perspective. And what they say is well, this is a huge problem in America in particular because it's all become about money. But he goes, it's not about like gender, it's not about gender inequality or that's not the issue. So they give an example of Scandinavia and they say Scandinavia is one of the most like egalitarian regions in terms of like, you know, feminist movement, influence, all that stuff. And they're like, in the world, and they don't have this problem. Right? They don't have these issues because they didn't make it into a business. And I think that's a great example that resonates with a lot of people who are either skeptical or people who are non-Muslim. We're not trying to tell people to go back to some kind of, you know, male-dominated society or something. This appeals to every single person when they understand that when you put so much emphasis on money and trying to cause conflict, that's where everything goes bad. We need to ditch that. We need a better solution.
And then it talks about it being a business producing revenues of over 50, was it billion dollars a year?
Billion. $50 billion.
Not million, yeah. Billion.
Yeah, billion.
Billion dollars. And the actual attorneys being in cahoots, pretty much all tied in with the judges and everybody's pretty much working together.
The judges too. The judges are, you know, they become politicians. They end up running for political offices. So they're working with the lawyers. They have campaigns, you know, so it's some shady stuff.
Because sometimes, a lot of times we go away from the divine system and we think there's something more just. So we do injustice to ourselves. Do you see that happening?
Yeah, I definitely see that happening. Yeah.
So now I think, like you said, everybody should watch it. It's something that should actually just... Because the haters out there, they try to put doubt in you to what Allah has revealed to you. And now when you see like the simplicity and someone out there who I mentioned, someone who, because I think that's another thing of the fitrah, the natural way for people to want to have a family. And if you don't have a family, if you're just out there, you know, following your lusts and desires and whatnot, and then you get exposed to these things and you have a nightmare of a situation that happens, then it kind of blocks you, you know, it hinders you in life. But now when you come talk to someone, I know when this has been explained, the simplicity of someone can actually get married and they can do it something in such a wholesome, beautiful way. You talk about this in your classes where it actually lasts for like the Islamic marriage can literally last, you said, like a minute?
Yeah.
If you want the fast version.
I've done the contract in like 30 seconds.
Yeah. 30 seconds.
30 seconds.
Yeah. So this is amazing. But now, before you even get to that, we were talking before about there's another institution, Muslim therapy, you know, a lot of times imams will outsource. They'll outsource to when people, couples come to them and they want marriage therapy, they want some counseling. And now we find out, I found this out actually a long time ago from one of my guests, Laura Doyle, who is a best-selling New York Times bestseller from the book Empowered Wife. And she talks about how she would try to save her marriage, and she ended up going to traditional marriage therapy, and she spent almost like around $10,000+, and she said it was a waste. It's broken. It doesn't work. You're coming across the same information. Is that right?
Absolutely. 100% is exactly what
now I'm you didn't say like 95%, you said 100%.
100%.
Why would you say that?
I'm seeing so many cases of this in our community now. I mean, maybe someone will say, oh, those are the cases you're getting, but I get a lot of cases, and that's exactly what's happening to a lot of people. They come in and they're like, you know, we've been trying, you know, couples therapy, we've been going for counseling, we've been going for this. And it's just not working. And, you know, I used to not investigate sometimes, but sometimes I make an exception for people who are kind of close to me, or if I'm in a season where I don't have too much work, I say, well, you know, let's sit down and give me an hour, give me 2 hours, give me a chance to see if I can make a difference. And then I'm seeing in case after case, some basic things that I bring up, they're like, well, the counselor never brought that up. I'm like, what do you mean they never brought it up? Like, this is common sense. How could this not come up? And like, literally, you know, there was a couple recently, they came to me, they said, we've been going for counseling for 4 years. We've been going to therapists, individual therapists, counseling, everything. And the wife was basically out the door, and she just said, I want to know how to get Islamically divorced. I'm 100% finished. And the close family, like close friends of mine personally, I said, you know what? Before I tell you how to do it, how to get out of the marriage, just give me 1 hour. You know, just with both of you. And literally within 1 hour, you know, this is not like to praise myself or anything, but they're dedicated, they're motivated themselves. Within 1 hour, the entire marriage turned around. And what they said was, they said, what you just told us in this 1 hour, for 4 years, not a single person, no counselor, no therapist would tell us the way in which you told us and what you told us, like where the issue was and what needs to be worked on. This is extremely concerning. The reason why it's concerning is I was taking a counseling course recently, and they said something very profound, not profound, but interesting. They said, counseling is not advice. That just shocked me. It's like, when you're counseling someone, you're not giving them advice. This is weird, right? Something seems off about that, because everyone who comes to the masjid, right, they come to an imam and they're like, we got problems. We got problems in our marriage. We got problems in our relationships, in our family, whatever it is. Why are they coming to you? They're coming to you for advice. So what do? You if you forward them to someone who's not allowed to give them advice, by definition, what just happened, right? So people don't understand the nuance behind that. People don't understand what's going on behind the scenes. And I think we really need to explore that in more detail.
I mean, that's deep, because the first thing that comes to my mind is where God Almighty, the creator of Allah, he talks about reminder benefits the believer. Reminder is pretty much synonymous with advice, no?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Adinu nasiha. I mean, the Prophet is talking about the deed is advice. So we're constantly trying to better each other by advising each other. We slip up, yep. We make mistakes. The Muslim is the mirror of another Muslim, right?
Exactly. And this, the mistakes you can't see in yourself, that's why you need a mirror to like be able to see some of your blemishes. You can't just figure it out on your own. So when people can't figure it out on their own, who's going to tell them, right? They need someone to point it out to them. And if you go to someone who you think is going to point it out to you, but they're not, because they're overly sensitive, they're overly cautious, they want to establish rapport with you, they need at least 10 to 20 sessions, which probably cost, you know, like $3,000 before you can even get to the level where we're going to tell you, yeah, this is kind of the issue that you got. This is what you need to work on. This is not to dismiss all counseling, but that kind of model or that kind of approach is pretty problematic for, especially for our community, for the entire society as a whole.
So let me understand this correctly. That it is this something? Are we talking about these are licensed marriage therapists that complete a certain curriculum, that get a certain license, that they're within their laws or etiquettes of therapy guidelines, there is something stipulated that you can't, what?
It's along the lines of you're not supposed to be giving your opinion, and you're not supposed to be giving advice on what you think the situation is. It's more along the lines of we're just going to explore your thoughts, you know, kind of get you to figure out the issue on your own, which is nice. You know, it's nice when someone tries to, you kind of lead them into figuring things out on their own. But if they can't, you don't tell them directly what it is. So you just kind of leave them hanging. And what ends up happening is a lot of people, they're not going to make it through 5 sessions or 10 sessions of therapy, either because they can't afford it or because they don't think it's going anywhere. Right. So people do need a quicker process, and they need something. They need to feel like they're making some progress as well. And I think that's not happening for a lot of people. And there's a lack of trust in the process itself, even though, you know, it's important to have third parties involved always whenever there's a conflict.
So paint a more vivid picture for us so we can better understand. Are you saying like this couple, they went to, what's the specific name of the type of therapy? It's just marriage counseling? Is this by...
They went to many... This couple's a good example. They went for 4... They had individual family issues. They went to therapists that are assessing what problems they had in their childhood with their own parents. Their parents used to yell and scream, so they used this, you know, psychodynamic approach of, you know what? It's like the glacier, you know, that underneath the water, there's like something deep. You had a bad upbringing. You're reenacting the relationship that your parents had with each other and, you know, into your own marriage. So you go deep. It takes, you know, years to talk about, you know, open up all the family issues that you had, you know, all the problems that you had in your household and everything, and then get there and then relate that now back into how you are copying the same bad patterns that, you know, your parents had, which is nice. So they did that. So they did all that for years. And then they also, so they're going to one therapist for that trauma. Then they're going to another therapist for the family issues, the marital issues between them. And then they're going to other therapists for different things, right? So total 4 years of therapy, I mean, maybe 100 sessions or more, right? So they're going through all of that, and it's not resolving any of their issues. And they're absolutely done. They're like nonstop. They're fighting in the therapy sessions. And, you know, the counselors are like, you know, it's good to get your feelings out, and it's good to get your emotions out. They're cussing each other out back and forth, right? So then I'm like, you know what? So they came to me and they said, yeah, it's over. It's finished. 1 hour, I just talked to both of them, not even in person, just, you know, on the screen, on FaceTime. And things completely changed around, right? And I'll tell you why they changed around. There's two main things people need to understand. Number one, one of the most effective ways of counseling or advising is that you have the person who's you're getting advice from, you have to trust them, right? There's some studies that show that 90% of the success of any counseling is whether you trust the person that you're going to. So Muslims in particular, what do they trust? When they hear a verse from the Quran, this is what the Quran tells you, this is how you're supposed to behave. This is what the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said, you're supposed to behave like this. When they hear that and they're practicing Muslims and they care about that, now they're trusting in the advice that's being given, right? So that's number one why it worked, because they're coming to me, you know, I'm an imam / sheikh. I'm giving them verses. I'm saying, this is what Islam teaches. This is the way, you know, you're both practicing Muslims, mashallah. They pray 5 times a day. They're good people in general. This is what Islam tells you to do. They trust the advice because it's coming from a divine source, number one. Number two, the other issue was none of those people were openly saying what the issue was. They're just kind of going all around, tiptoeing around the issue and not addressing it directly. In this case specifically, you know, I listened to the guy, I listened to the girl, I asked both of them to give me clear-cut examples, not just your feeling. You tell me how you feel, but you have to tell me what incident really happened so I can have an understanding of what the reality is, almost like functioning like a judge. Like, give me your story, I need details, you have any witnesses, and then I can wait and I can understand and give you my general advice. That's exactly what I did. And I said, well, in this case in particular, I told one of them, which was the husband, I said, you know what, 90% of the issue is with you because of this, and I laid it out for him. And I'm like, do you understand? And this is what Islam says. Islam says you should be like this. And he got it. And the woman, when she heard that, she broke down crying. She literally broke down crying. And she says, we've been going for 4 years and nobody could tell him what you just said. You know, it doesn't matter whether you say it in a nice way or you say it in a mean way or you say it in a direct way or you use verses or hadiths or whatever. No one would do something like that for whatever reason. And I'm like, this is a problem. Why are people not directly addressing the issue? Because it almost feels like you're taking a side, right? And this is one of the issues in counseling that we had discussed this before. This guy named Terry Real, he's got a pretty good website, terryreal.com. He has one article about, you know, joining through the truth. He says sometimes a counselor needs to take a side when they see someone is clearly wrong. Otherwise, you're just building up credit by validating a person's feelings, but you never cash in that credit. So sometimes you got to take sides and say someone's got bad behavior. Someone is, you know, talking. If a woman is, you know, yelling and cursing her husband out, she needs to be told that this is not acceptable. If a guy is doing the same thing to his wife, he needs to be told this is not acceptable. You need to work on it. So people are not being direct. And when it comes to this type of counseling, you need to be wise. You need to understand where people are coming from, but you need to tell them at the end of the day, look, here's the problem. Here's the solution, almost like a prescription. And this is kind of what I do in some sessions. I write a prescription for them. This is what you need to do. Do it, and you're going to see a change in things. And whoever does it, it means that they're putting in the effort. Whoever doesn't do the prescription, something is not right.
But isn't this the way of the Prophet ﷺ? Isn't this the way that he would do things? The one who was sent as a guidance and a director towards the truth and how we need to handle every situation?
Exactly. This is the way the Prophet ﷺ used to do things. And it's also common sense. I mean, if anyone thinks about it, when someone comes to you for advice, if you beat around the bush the whole time and you never tell them what the problem is, can you imagine someone's got a speaking problem, they're trying to learn public speaking and they keep making mistakes and you're like, I want to be very sensitive. I don't want to tell them that they keep on saying or making mistakes or they're stuttering or something. At some point, you should tell them what the issue is so that they can actually start working on it. Otherwise, they're not going to be able to work on it.
Now, were these Muslim therapists that they were going to?
They had both. So they had mostly non-Muslim therapists, and some of them were Muslim therapists as well.
Did you have also some Muslim therapists, like do imams take a certain course, then... are there certain elective courses, or how does it work? How much training do you have to get is it a license that you get in this area?
For imams?
No, yeah, for someone to complete a certain marriage therapy course, what is it that makes them a registered therapist? And have some Muslims that have completed this requirement that have this license, they're copying this way, they've seen the flaws here, have they shared some of their experiences and their concerns with you?
Yes, they have. A few. So here's the reality of the situation. I hate to put it this way, but like I said, we got to be direct and we got to be open about these things. Is that, you know, most Muslims who go into this field, they have to complete like at least a three year with, you know, whatever, 3,000 hours of practice in the field. They need to complete that course. That course is being taught by secular universities, right? Which has a very secular framework. It has a very materialistic worldview of a framework. So there's some good in all of that, but it's a rigorous course. It's definitely a rigorous course, but it has secular underpinnings, right? So it has, there's undertones are there. There's a worldview, and that worldview sometimes is in line with the Islamic worldview and oftentimes can be in conflict with the Islamic worldview. So when they complete that course and they do all of that, most Muslim counselors are exactly that. They're Muslim counselors. They're Muslims and they're secular counselors combined. They're not Islamic counselors, right? So even if they're practicing, they pray five times a day, they come to the masjid, that doesn't automatically take their entire training that they've had and Islamize it and, like, you know, bring in all the principles from the Quran and Sunnah and, like, make it according to, you know, the teachings of Islam. And oftentimes, if they're not knowledgeable about Islam, they don't understand where there's a conflict between the two that they're practicing, right? And this is a huge problem, and I've seen it in our community on a massive level. There's a few a few Muslim counselors who've been through the system, have a very good knowledge of Islam, good understanding of Islamic law and theology and all of those things. And they're looking at it and they're saying, man, this is horrible. Like the stuff that we're being told to do, something is really wrong with this. This is diametrically opposed to the teachings of Islam. And if we apply this in our own community on, you know, Muslim couples or even just regular couples, this is definitely not only is it not ideal, it can actually be potentially harmful. So there's been some writings about it. But the problem is, the more you critique that openly, the more you're in danger of losing your license, potentially. I mean, this is their livelihood. This is their career. So if you're stuck in that field and this is your career, then critiquing your career is a dangerous thing, and people don't really want to do it, except a few people who are willing to take the risk. So there is critique, and I have heard from quite a few people. I'll drop some names. Sheikh Omar Hussein in Texas, he's a great example of someone who's completed a counseling program. He's finishing his PhD in psychology now. He has some really good critiques on the program that he's been in. Ustad Hassan Alwan is another one who's finishing his MFT, Marriage Family Therapy license. He has very good critiques as well. And non-Muslims are even critiquing it as well. Like you said, Laura Doyle is one example. She's not the only one. Jenny Seacrest, she has a book called Marriage is a Business. She's critiquing it. Haltzman has a book, Secrets of Happily Married Men. He's critiquing the process. So Muslims and non-Muslims are both critiquing a lot of issues that are going on here, but it's still a minority, right? And the bigger problem is that imams, whether they're excused for this or not, they're so busy, they're outsourcing all of the issues, family issues that come to them. They're going to outsource it to people who they think are experts in the field, right? But what happens is, it's like experts in the field, because they've studied a lot, but to what extent has that secular mentality permeated their thoughts and the way in which they deal with things? That's the problem. Like, same thing, if you tell someone, you know, just go to your doctor and you're going to solve all your health problems, your doctor may just throw medicine at you, right? Drug companies have convinced them to just prescribe you medicine for any pain. They're not going to give you any holistic health meetings. They're not going to tell you to change your diet or anything. Just take this, pop this painkiller, and everything's going to be fine. Well, you know, the doctor is an expert in his field, but maybe that's not the best approach. We need to be a little bit more critical on the approach, especially as Muslims who have a better understanding of what we're supposed to be doing in life.
I mean, this is extremely important. This is a topic I think everybody needs to watch this. Everybody that wants to have a family is in a family. Every imam, every scholar, just everybody needs to watch this. I mean, marriage is half your deen. And if we're at such a high rate of divorce, and this is a broken system, you mentioned the book, and many people, therapists talk about this, that marriage is a business. I mean, divorce is a business. So like, you go down one of these rabbit holes, you look into it, you're like, hold on, the system is broke. But what would you say is the solution now for the people who are outsourcing, and now they're coming across this information? How do they balance this out? Do they throw the baby out with the bathwater? If they went through this, how do they put it in perspective?
So, I mean, there are long-term solutions and there are short-term solutions. I think in the short term, we need to really vet very well. We need to vet people who we're referring out to. So, before we say, Sister Maryam, she has a counseling degree. She did the whole program. She did the 5-year program, and she got straight A's, and she won the award for excellence in her university. And you're like, well, because she's a Muslim and she prays 5 times a day, she must be the person that we got to outsource everyone to. Like, that's the solution for us. That's a horrible approach. That's not the approach to. We should vet people and look and say, well, you know, maybe interview them, talk to them. What's your approach to counseling? How are you different from just the average non-Muslim counselor, just besides being Muslim? So that's a short-term solution. We should be careful about who we send people to, number one. And I think, again, many people can't afford counselors, right? Or, you know, it's a lot of money for them. We need to bring back kind of the old system of wise elders in the community who can just give it guidance and advice to people. You know, one, we need to revive the willingness of younger people to look at mentors and get advice from them. This is a problem in our society. You know, that willingness to like respect the wise people and have like this idea of mentorship where everyone's not just equal across the board. And we need to bring those people who have wisdom, who have life experience, and give them a venue to be able to offer advice to people. Say, hey, listen, you know, it may not be your own, you know, your own parents. Maybe they have a broken relationship. Maybe they're not the best people to be offering advice, but there are people in the community who provide that, who could provide that, play that role. And that's really the way it's always worked. I mean, prior to counseling and stuff, there's always been wise elders in the community that like kind of sit people down, give them good advice about life in general and how to, you know, work through things. And that's very beneficial. So that's something that we should be able to revive. And then if we go into the counseling field in particular, we should be vetting. That's a short-term solution. The long-term solution is people who are in the field, people who are going and getting these degrees, they need to go in with the right mentality. It's almost like it's like walking into an Islamic studies department at Harvard or Yale or Princeton or Stanford or whatever. I mean, you know, most people, they're like, well, I'm studying Islam. Okay, you go in that department, you're not studying Islam. You're studying kufr. I mean, you're studying disbelief, and you're probably going to be brainwashed if you're not really, number one, very intelligent, and number two, have an alternative knowledge source. So the same way, people who are going to go in this field, they should have a very strong knowledge of Islam coming in. And they should also have their critical thinking cap on, and they should look and say, well, which aspects of this are aligned with Islamic values? Okay, we're gonna take that and we're gonna say this is good. Which aspects are problematic? Which approach is problematic and is resulting in not very good results, or it's against the teachings of Islam? We need to critique that. We need to be open enough to either write some blog posts about it. We need to go and tell people, hey, this is a problem, and we need to offer alternative solutions. So alternative counseling, or what I like to, I just started calling this uncounseling, basically. It's like, you know, we need an alternative way of doing the counseling process, but without being bound by principles like you're not supposed to give advice, you're not supposed to give your own opinion, or you're not supposed to do things like that.
And just to repeat, that is pretty much in the system now, that you're not supposed to give your own opinion, you're not supposed to give advice. This is the contention that you have and scholars have, because the dean is advice. And you mentioned something about Laura Doyle that, now I thought about Laura Doyle this, and I really recommend her book, Empowered Wife. She mentions exactly what you said, that how she saved her marriage was she started to go to people after this failed, this system of the common marriage counseling. After she wasted so much of her time and money with her husband and still didn't work, then she went to people who had been married for 20, 30, 40 years, people who have been veterans in the area, people who had more knowledge, experience, and she started to ask them, like, how did you make it work? She started to do, like, the elders in her community, like you're talking about. And this is how she actually came across many gems, wisdom, that helped to save her marriage.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about, a lot of times you go into these, we think this is like the gold standard. This is like almost like divine. Like, we don't question. This is like, they have all the data, all the science, and, you know, this is it. If it doesn't work here. And many of these people, when you look, they're, a lot of them are divorced themselves. They are unhappy. Many of them are also in shambles. Their life is upside down. Many of them don't have God in their lives and are atheists. And what do you, I mean, you might get some few good pieces of it, something that you could benefit, but overall, I mean, does that raise a concern?
Yeah, no, it definitely raises a concern, because if people, you know, one of the biggest things for, especially for Muslims, if we're talking about the Muslim community, one of the things that resonates with them is, you know, this is what God wants you to do. Like, having good behavior is something that God is going to be pleased with. That's a big motivating factor. And if you're behaving badly, you have bad akhlaq or bad character, bad manners, the way in which you're speaking, the way in which you're doing things, the way in which you're being so selfish and only caring about yourself and not so much, you know, either your spouse or the rest of the family or something, that plays a big role in keeping our behavior or our nafs, our ego in check. Now, you remove that from the equation and we're like, no, we have to secularize the entire process. We're never going to bring up God. We're never going to bring up religious teachings. We're never going to bring up. You just took a massive force that's going to motivate people to be better, and you just threw it out the window. That's a huge problem, right? So that's what's going to happen when you're forced into a secular environment where God is removed from the equation completely. And that's sad. That's automatically going to result in much less positive results than if you had equation for people who care.
Because if you don't have God Almighty, Allah, in your life, you don't have this taqwa, like you go to someone, like I said, you might have been divorced 2-3 times, but you gain so much experience, you're right back in there, right? Because this is something Allah loves, that people, that's your half your deen. But you go to someone who maybe had that horrible experience, and now they're actually maybe pushing you to why you need to be married, you know what I mean? It's just going to be then they start to sway you away from that because they don't have that whole holistic approach and like you said, God in the equation.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays in society, I mean, Huffington Post is a fairly liberal newspaper online, or paper e-zine or whatever, e-zine. They had an article about 4 years ago, top 10 reasons why people don't need to get married. Like, they were basically convincing. It was like an article.
That's what I'm talking about. Exactly, yeah.
Need to get married. Why would you bother with even getting married in the first place? You don't need committed relationships. Too much of a burden, too much of a hassle, right? I mean, if that's the mentality it's coming from, what do you think the mentality of the marriage within the marriage is going to be? The mentality of how to get divorced or when to get divorced is going to be? There's something wrong with the framework, right? Something is wrong with the foundation as a whole. You can't expect amazing results no matter how well fine-tuned and researched the little solutions that they come up with. If the foundation is rotten, there's usually going to be a problem with that. So we have a foundation in Islam. We should build something on a solid foundation.
I mean, you do have people. I've listened to someone like, for instance, Tony Robbins. Let's just throw him out, for example.
Yeah.
I think he'd be someone also that would agree that this traditional approach, he's more of a direct person. If you've ever watched some of his stuff,
yeah,
he comes at it also direct. He tells you, okay, this is the issue. You need to change this. Have you ever watched some of his work?
I have. And that's why he's so wildly popular, because people realize that that's the approach that they need in their life. It actually works for a lot of people. It may not work for everyone, but it works for a lot of people. And when you throw that out, you've just eliminated a great technique that could have changed people's lives for the better.
Yeah. Do you feel that we've had some people also going through the marriage counseling, going to some imam scholars who've also taken some of this knowledge and implemented it, but they felt they weren't getting this like what you did, like the imam or the scholar, they were like, kind of tippy-toeing, you know, around and not giving, like, if the man was wrong, tell him, give him the nasiha from the Quran and the Sunnah. And same thing on the other side. If the woman, if she was doing something that was not right, that he would tell her. He would quote some hadith, but they were having sessions and no Quran, not much Quran, not Sunnah, but philosophy and books recommended that, you know, same thing. Something that's not like really getting to the bottom like this. So do you feel like this has been that some have fallen into this also, and that are they've taken this way that is not as direct, because you might get pushback, confrontation, and now this is more like you're saying, just the mellow, easy, like don't confront, and just many people have fallen into this also.
Yeah, no, definitely. I see that trend among many people, even among imams. And there's a number of reasons for it. You know, the first reason is because, you know, people nowadays, they are more sensitive than they used to be. That's just like we've raised a generation of ultra sensitive people who want to be handled with like silk gloves, you know, and that's a problem. So imams realize that, like, we got to be very careful, because if we say something wrong, then they're going to be like, oh, I'm never coming to the masjid again. Like, you know, but at the end of the day, maybe like in your first session or second session, you could be a little bit, you know, careful about how you deal with someone. But eventually, if you don't tell them, then you've done them an injustice. So I think imams are afraid, many imams are afraid of alienating people away from the masjid or from the religion of Islam by saying something. But if you become so afraid of doing that, where do you speak the truth? Like, at the end of the day, where is, like, you know, telling the, enjoining the good and forbidding the evil? Like, you've missed that completely. So I think that's one mistake that a lot of imams end up making. So they have a good intention, but the result is not a good result. The second thing is that they're just really busy. So what they'll do is they'll be like, well, you know, this is not really my field. I'm not that well versed in it. And let me just give you, like, here's a book for both of you. Both of you just, like, go read this book on marriage or on whether or not you should get divorced. And they've not even read the book themselves, right? Or they just hand them a book. And that's not a good approach either, because, you know, usually there's one of the partners, you know, one of the husband or wife is going to read the book because they're a reader, and the other one may not be a reader. So it's like, well, you know, you read the book. Oh, why don't you just sit straight up, like, get to the bottom of the issues? And sometimes the book is not even addressing the issues that they have. It's just talking about, like, in general, you know, try to, you know, be nice and try to be this, but you're not addressing the problem itself. I think that's another concern, another issue. And there's the third thing is that a lot of imams are afraid to take a stance, just like anyone else. If you give advice to someone and say, you know what, like, this is the problem, or if you tell someone, you know what, your situation is so bad, I would advise you to get out of this marriage. You're going to have to live with that decision. Maybe they're going to come back to you 6 months later and say, you know, how could you say that to me? You know, and say, well, based upon everything that I saw, you know, this was what my advice was. People are afraid of giving advice, or vice versa. You know what? It's really not that bad. You could work this out. You know, you can forgive and forget and everything's going to be fine. You should stay in the marriage. And then all of a sudden, like, that marriage becomes even worse. And then they come back to you 6 months later and say, you know, well, I came to you and you told me to stick it up in this marriage. And look what happened. Look how bad it was. So it's like, when you give advice, you have to own that advice. Right. And there's consequences of giving that advice. That's where there's a danger. And people are afraid of the liability. Right. Not only, like, legal liability, like the counselors have, you know, it can come back to, you know, haunt them. But just the moral liability that someone's going to come back and blame you. But the reality is, if you're good, you know what you're doing, you're judging, you're pretty wise. You know, you understand how to do these things. You have good Islamic knowledge. You offering some clear cut advice, when you give that advice and it's good, based on experience and knowledge, you own it, and you know you're going to get critiqued. I mean, that's, I think a lot of imams will also fall into the whole, you know, popularity cult of, if I say this, then I'm going to lose my popularity, or I'm going to be degraded or shamed. And then the justification in the back of their mind is, I won't be able to do as much good as I'm doing. So they don't have, like, a bad intention, but it ends up preventing them from doing what they should be doing. And that's a struggle that I think any public figure goes through. Like, you know, if I say this way, or if I do this, there's a lot of people who are not going to like it. They're going to critique me for it. They're going to criticize me for it. But again, as long as you're doing it with wisdom, if you don't speak every single time you're supposed to speak, or you should speak, because you're afraid of the consequences, then, you know, who's going to say that? Who's going to make that statement? So it's the same thing when it comes to, you know, giving advice to people. If you're afraid that the advice is going to come back to haunt you because someone's going to hold it against you, that fear should not be a paralyzing fear which prevents you from speaking the truth.
What do you think has happened also? I believe one of your courses, you talk about this, where you'll have so many hadith on a particular topic, and the one who really does justice to it, that person takes everything in context, a holistic approach, right? Somebody can just take, and I think you give this example, let's say how the Prophet saw some dressed, for instance, and you would think that's all he came for, is just, you know, to teach people how to dress. But then you have all these other hadith you're missing about on good akhlaq, good character, right? So then also with marriage, I mean, it's nice, obviously, I mean, how would the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, when you would come, I mean, you have a hadith where the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and this is one of those where a person doesn't shy away from speaking. There's no hesitancy, where he'll say, you know, that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, whoever treats his, the best of you are those who treat their wives kindly, right? And he talks about, listen, treat women kindly. He talks, you know, being patient with your wife. And there's this is this we hear a lot of, but then you don't hear much. What when the Prophet ﷺ would give advice, keep it balanced. So we need to be kind with our wives, patient, to provide, maintain, protect, etc., etc. But then a woman will come to him, and do you think it's because of the context of the times we live in? People are like scared to come out. Where he would say, look, evaluate yourself concerning your husband, because he's your Jannah or Jahannam. Right? You'd hear these things. He would say directly, you know, that you would obey your husband, respect him, and you can enter any of these doors from Jannah. Allah even says in the Quran, the righteous women are those who are devoutly obedient. Oh, nowadays, if you say something like that, it's like the whole feminist push. And it's a shame that you'll even have some Muslim sisters be like, hold on, they'll rebel back. But this is actually rebelling against the Quran. So have we lost that balanced approach?
Yeah, I think we've definitely lost the balanced approach, and that's because of what's happening in our society. In the other book, I think it was in The Secrets of Happily Married Men, they had a very interesting study that they shared. They said 75% of women initiate divorces in America. So they gave that statistic to a group of university students in America, and they said 75% of women initiate divorces in America. Who do you think is at fault? And they said, yeah, it's obviously the men. That's why the women are initiating the divorces, right? Because the men are at fault. So then it was a psychological experiment. So they went to another class, same university, and they changed this statistic, and they falsified it. And they said, actually, 75% of men initiate divorces in America, which is not true, but they were testing, right? So who do you think is at fault? And they said, it's the men. So basically, even if you give the wrong statistic, right, if the men are initiating it, the men are at fault. If the women are initiating it, the men are still at fault. So what's happening is that there is an anti-male bias in our society when it comes to, you know, marital issues and these things. And that's partly because people are trying to overcompensate for some of the wrongs that were done in the past and many of the wrongs that are still taking place, but overcompensating gets us away from the balance that you were mentioning, right? We have to remain balanced. And I think that's the trend in our society right now. And a lot of Muslims, they automatically jump on the bandwagons of trends. And that's as well, right? So people are afraid, right? It's super popular. So if I go on my social media, you know, and I make a little video about, you know, listen, guys, you know, you need to treat your wives properly. You know, you need to take care of them. You need to love them. You need to give them gifts. You need to have mercy with them. I'm going to get like 1,000 likes or something. Now, if I flip that post around and I go, listen, sisters, you know, you need to show respect to your husband. Don't like talk back to him. Don't disrespect him. This is going to improve your marriage. You know, give up your opinion sometimes and show proper, you know, dutifulness to your husband. It's going to get like 1,000, you know, negative comments basically blasting me. You know, how dare you talk about women like that? And you're not even a woman. You don't understand women's experience. You're a male chauvinist. You're this, you're that. So that's a sad reality of our culture where we're prevented from having that balance. And even if you put both in the exact same video, it might dampen some of the harm, but it'll still happen, basically. And that's a problem, because that shows you the trend in our society. And people, when they go against the trend, if they're going to be attacked, they're afraid. So just like you said, you know, you quote the hadiths about guys being good to women and being good to their wives, you're going to get nonstop applauses and thumbs ups and everything. You try and do the opposite, you're going to get blasted. And if we're operating in that type of environment of pressure, what's going to happen? You can't give balanced and just advice to both sides. We're going to definitely have family conflict. We're going to have family breakdowns. No matter how wise you say it, you're going to get blasted. It's a problem. So, you know, these are some of the challenges that exist due to the culture in which we live in.
And this is just giving way to shaitan then. I mean, this is because if we end up seeing a male man, a man, a brother, whatever, who's getting out of line, then we'll call him out. We have to call him out, right? And help put him in his place. But then same thing on the other side. We can't have this happening, because oppression could go from both sides, and then just be quiet, not say anything. And it was an interesting true story. The brother was telling me he also was asking the sisters, one sheikh was asking the sisters, why don't they, you know, speak up when they see some of these things? They said, because usually the voices of this small minority of women is so loud, you know what I mean, that they push back so much, and they get a lot of heat, so they stay quiet. But do you think this is also a duty of women to play a big part?
Yeah, I have recent examples of that too. The women are afraid of the women to speak up and say, hey, you know, maybe you should behave differently with your own husband, or, you know, you should, you know, maybe the issue is with you. Like, they'll if they say it, they get blasted by the women as well. So if you're a minority, it's hard to fight a vocal majority, you know. So I have many sisters, because I told many sisters, I'm like, why don't you be more vocal about it? You understand. Why don't you just tell them? And it's like, when we do, we get blasted completely. We can't do it. And that's really sad.
That's an easy, I think that's a cop out there, because that's your jihad, your struggle to do your part, also inviting to good, forbidding evil.
Absolutely.
So you can't just, you know, because what if we said the same thing back, right? So we have to call it out on both sides equally if we're talking about being fair.
Everyone's got a role to play. Everyone's got to do their job, and in the capacity and with the blessings that Allah has given them. So I guess in this sense, being a female, to being able to point out issues within female, that's a blessing in and of itself, because oftentimes males will be dismissed, especially in this culture, saying, you know, you can't talk about women's issues because you're a man, automatically by default. I mean, that's a huge problem in and of itself. Never existed, you know, in history, in Islamic history at least. But that's the narrative, that's the culture in which we live in today.
Tell us about this. Is he a therapist, this Terry Real?
Terry Real, yeah. He's a therapist himself, and he's critiquing traditional approaches or contemporary approaches to counseling. And he's saying this doesn't work. We need to make an adjustment on some of these things. So one of the articles that I was mentioning before, he has an article called Joining Through the Truth. And he basically says that, you know, we're taught in our school, in our training, that you should never take sides. You should just listen, and no matter what happens, just doesn't matter in your mind. If you're like, hey, this person is the problem in the marriage, you don't just be open about it, and you just try and, you know, keep validating their concerns, and you're listening to them. And the goal is to kind of build up enough credit with them, enough trust with them, that eventually you're going to be able to get through to them. But what happens, he gives a scenario. He goes, like, there was, you know, one woman, she was complaining, there was some issues, and the guy kept building up trust with the husband. But the way she put it, she's like, but he never cashed in on all of that credit that he had built up. So you never come and say, hey, this is the problem, right? So that's what happens. So sometimes you're listening, you're like validating, you're making them feel good, you're making the trust between the two of you. Like, how long are you going to do that for? You can just keep building trust after what, like 1 year? You can be like, okay, now is enough trust built up that I can tell you what your problem is? Or, you know, no, you can't, the believer can't be the mirror of another believer until, like, you know, 5 years into developing all this trust. That's not going to work. So he's critiquing that. And he's saying this is the wrong approach, and you need to be wise about it. But sometimes you do need to take a side, and you need to call things out as they are. This is bad behavior. You need to stop doing this. And this is a non-Muslim who is in the field, who's been doing this for decades, realizes that there's a problem with this approach, and he's calling it out.
Is he kind of like John Gotti Taylor, who's also in a set? Right? You know, he's the one who talks about the broken schooling system. And is he also kind of that in this area, in this field?
Exactly. Like John Taylor Gatto. Yeah,
John Taylor Gatto, yeah.
Yeah, someone who calls out the education system and say, hey, you know, these schools and stuff, there's a lot of problematic stuff going on here. Yeah, exactly. Similar to that.
So wrapping up now, so what can we take home from all of this? We started off with the film that, A, your homework is, you recommend every imam, scholar, Muslim should watch this, Divorce Corp. You recommend that, right?
100%.
100%, not 99%. Watch the trailer that we started off with. We talked about also, we touched upon the simplicity also in the divine system that saves people from all these nightmares. And at the end, they talk about how much this actually increases murder, suicide, death due to this business, the $50 billion business in this Divorce Corp, the Islamic solutions to it. We talk about the broken system of the current model with marriage therapy. And how can we wrap all this up, and what final closing advice would you give for the imam, scholars, and just the people in general?
Yeah, so the 2 points, I'll reemphasize them. And that is that, number one, people need to, wrapping this up, we have a problem in the Muslim community that people are afraid of getting a third party involved when they have a problem. And we need to get over this. We can't keep our issues to ourselves. We can't be afraid of airing our dirty laundry to other people. When there's a conflict, in the first signs of conflict, we can't resolve it between ourselves. We need to get a third party involved. That's number one. And Muslims need to get over that, and people need to get over that. There's nothing embarrassing about getting somebody else involved. Number two, the people that you choose to get involved, you better make sure that they have a good Islamic worldview and understanding. If they're going to come with a purely secular approach, a God divorced, you know, divorced from God approach, God is not part of the equation at all, then don't expect the most amazing results through that process, because the process is not built on a strong foundation. And number three, the two issues with the approach is not only that God is removed from the process, but two issues. Number one, you have to trust your counselor. And if you're a practicing Muslim, you trust your religion to come up with these solutions. If you go to someone who can tell you what Islam really says, you're more likely, the counseling is more likely to be effective than the secular approach. And number two, when you go, people need to tell you openly and directly what the issue is. And if they don't tell you what the issue is, and you keep spending tens of thousands of dollars on things, and they're not being direct with you after a session or two in a wise way, you're beating around the bush. And we need to stop beating around the bush and tiptoeing around issues, because they're not going to get addressed if you don't tell them directly what the issue is.
Stop beating around the bush. Tell us what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants us to hear, and the last and final message sent to mankind, because here we have a divine system. We have all the solutions. So stop beating around the bush. How's that?
Perfect.
People can get in touch with you at the Cali Islamic University. If they want to take some courses and sign up with you and hook up with you, where can they reach you?
Yeah, calislamic.com, or they can go to my personal website, mustafaumar.com. And we got a new project called askthescholars.com.
Askthescholars.com. Thank you very much, Sheikh. Thank you very much for sharing this with us. And inshallah, this can be of great benefit. Inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And if you like this episode of The Deen Show, like this video, share this video far and wide, and support us on our Patreon page so we can continue this work. Thank you for tuning in. Peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.